Acts chapter 12. Now about that time Herod the king stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church, and he killed James the brother of John with the sword. And because he saw it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to take Peter also. Then were the days of unleavened bread. And when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to four quaternions of soldiers to keep him, intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people. Peter therefore was kept in prison, but prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. And when Herod would have brought him forth, the same night Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and the keepers before the door kept the prison. And behold, the angel of the Lord came unto him, and a light shined in the prison, and he smote Peter on the side. And he raised him up, saying, Arise up quickly. And his chains fell off from his hands. And the angel said unto him, Gird thyself, and bind on thy sandals. And so he did. And he saith unto him, Cast thy garment about thee, and follow me. And he went out and followed him, and wist not that it was true which was done by the angel, but thought he saw a vision. When they were past the first and second ward, they came unto the iron gate that leadeth unto the city, which opened to them of his own accord, and they went out and passed on through one street, and forthwith the angel departed from him. And when Peter was come to himself, he said, Now I know of a surety that the Lord hath sent his angel, and hath delivered me out of the hand of Herod, and from all the expectation of the people of the Jews. And when he had considered the thing, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. And as Peter knocked at the door of the gate, a damsel came to hearken, named Rhoda. And when she knew Peter's voice, she opened not the gate for gladness, but ran in and told how Peter stood before the gate. And they said unto her, Thou art mad. But she constantly affirmed that it was even so. Then said they, It is his angel. But Peter continued knocking. And when they had opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. But he beckoned unto them with the hand to hold their peace, declaring unto them how the Lord had brought him out of the prison. And he said, Go show these things unto James and to the brethren. And he departed and went into another place. Now as soon as it was day, there was no small stir among the soldiers what was become of Peter. And when Herod had sought for him and found him not, he examined the keepers and commanded them that they should be put to death. And he went down from Judea to Caesarea and there abode. And Herod was highly displeased with them of Tyre and Sidon. But they came with one accord to him, and having made Blastus the king's chamberlain their friend, desired peace, because their country was nourished by the king's country. And upon a set day Herod, arrayed in royal apparel, sat upon his throne and made an oration unto them. And the people gave a shout, saying, It is the voice of a god and not of a man. And immediately the angel of the Lord smote him, because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost. But the word of God grew and multiplied, and Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem. And when they had fulfilled their ministry, and took with them John, whose surname was Mark. All right, tonight I want to look at this one little person that is in this chapter. Her name is Rhoda. This is an amazing story, and Nikki, I want the girls out here in church. I'm preaching to them tonight. Hi, cute little girls. Would you like to sit up in the front row and hear about a little girl named Rhoda? Okay. This chapter tonight is about a man who got put in prison, and about a church who prayed for him, and about a little girl who did a couple things, and about a king who put the apostle in prison and who died very shortly after. Okay? There's a lot in this chapter. First of all, the persecution for Christians happens. God's judgment on this persecutor came, and oftentimes it is the case that people who stretch out their hand against God's church end up in deep trouble for it. This man was a jerk, and nobody came and killed him. He died a very amazing death because he was giving a speech and the people were there telling him it is the voice of a god, because these people, it was just politics just like we have in our country. They were worshiping this king because their country was nourished by his country, and they expected to get something by worshiping him. So they sat there saying it is the voice of a god, and worms came and smote him. He was eaten of worms. Actually, it says the angel of the Lord smote him because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms. What exactly happened to this king, I do not know. I don't know what exactly took place, but he died. And Peter, the man who he had put in prison, was free, walking the streets of the city again. Now, what is amazing about this story here is the little picture, the little glimpse that we get in the center of this chapter of the church. That is to me the most amazing part of this chapter. We know without a doubt that it was not hard for the angel to come down and open the prison and let Peter out. God, who is the author of all life and the creator of all things, when the angel and Peter were walking up to the city, the gates were shut. Obviously, the prison must have been outside of the city. As they were walking up towards the city, the gate just swung open. The gate would have been shut and locked and possibly even had people there guarding it. But the gate just swung open. These things are pretty amazing. But when you get down to the church, with everything they should have known, everything they had been through, the word that they had, the miracles that they saw of Jesus, they were the most amazing. They were the most amazing, full of their unbelief. And this is what happened. It says, Peter, when he had considered, in verse 12, when he had considered the thing, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. Do you guys remember any other time in the New Testament that a bunch of people were gathered together gathered together behind a locked door? Right after Jesus was crucified. Now, we have a very similar story here. James was just killed. Next, they put Peter in prison, planning to kill him, because the Jews were happy with Herod that he killed James, so he decided to make them happier. And so he was going to kill Peter too. So he put Peter in prison. Did the Jews have good reason to be afraid? No. Not as Christians. They did not have any reason to be afraid. Does the Bible tell us anything about fearing man? Yes, it says not to be afraid of man. The Bible tells us actually who we are supposed to fear, and that is God, and we are not supposed to fear man. Now, if you remember back to that time, the disciples were gathered together in a room with the door locked, it says, and Jesus appeared in the room and talked to them. Jesus could get through the door when it was not locked. But now I want you to notice something. In this situation, when Peter got to this house and began knocking on the door and calling out to them, how come the angel came down to the prison and took Peter's chains off? Notice some of the things that the angel did. The angel took Peter's chains off. The angel did not dress Peter. The angel told Peter to dress himself. The angel opened the prison doors. When they got to the city, the door of the city opened of its own accord. The angel did not open the door where the people, the Christians, were praying. Peter had to knock for a long time to get that door opened. And you know, there is a lot of times, I believe, in a lot of churches that a lot of people are expecting God to do something for them that they have the ability in their own fingers to perform. And God almost never does anything for a person that they can do themselves. Almost never. God is there to help us when we need help. Sometimes we think He should be helping us when He is not. And He knows what He's doing. But God is not there to plow our fields, to plant our grain, to reap our harvest, to put our harvest into storage, and to cook our meals. And you don't see Him doing that. Not in the Bible, nor in church history. Peter could not get out of the prison. And when God was going to help Peter, God helped Peter out of the prison. But God did not help Peter into the house where the Christians were. Because there were people in there who had the ability to open the door. Now, that's one thing I want to notice about this story. I want you to notice another thing. There were many people in this house that were gathered together praying. It says in verse 12, where many were gathered together praying. And as Peter knocked at the door of the gate, a damsel came to hearken named Rhoda. I have a question that you may not think as you quickly read through this passage. It may not come to your mind, but I want to ask you a question. Why were these many people in a house behind a locked door in the first place? There were lots of people. You know, we lock our doors when we leave. When we leave our house, we lock our doors so a thief can't come in and destroy the house. He can't anyway. But we lock our doors. If we go to bed at night, we lock our doors. We would never dream of sitting in our living room with our doors locked when we have had people over visiting and had 20 people in the living room. We would never dream of having our doors locked. Why? We don't nothing to be afraid of. Apparently, these people were scared. They were afraid that the authorities might show up at the house and take more of them. So they had the door locked. Now, let me ask you a question. If there were many people in a house praying and they had the doors locked, why did a young girl go to answer the door? That was ridiculous. If they were so scared with 50 people in the house that they had to have the doors locked, why, when somebody starts banging on the door, did a little girl go to open it? Did they care about her, themselves? Who were they there praying for? Were they praying for Peter, or were they there because they were scared themselves? Why did this little girl go to the door? Well, the fact of the matter was, somebody had to do it. And when there was a knock at the door, it was probably the person's job who was not there praying for Peter to take care of the other things that needed to be done. You see, there was most likely, and I know way too many adults, I wish I didn't know any, I'm sorry to say this, but I wish I did not know any adults. All of you people here who are adults should become children so you can be right with God. If there are anybody here who is an adult, God says if you're going to be saved, you need to come to Him as a child. I don't like adults. I don't. I think they are very yucky. Now, I do know lots of adults that have the attitude of a child, and I love them. Okay? If you are here as an adult and you have the humility as of a child, then I like you. I don't personally know any adult in this room right now who has an adult attitude. Okay, I'm glad to say that. But I do know lots of adults who do. They smell sort of like a cow barn. I'm not sure what they smell like, but I don't like them. I know enough people to know the general character of most people. And there's one thing that I can guess. This is a good guess. It's not written in the Bible, but it's going to be my guess. There were people in this house who were spiritual. And then there were people who were young, ignorant, whatever you want to say. And Rhoda was just one of those little people. She wasn't there to pray. She was there to feed the people who were praying if they wanted to eat. She was there to keep the fire in the house going. Whatever needed to be done, that was her job. She was, well, actually, if you go look at what the Greek word that's here translated damsel, it is basically the word for a servant. She may have even been a slave. If she was a slave, she was probably a Christian slave. Either way, she may have been a slave. But she was a maidservant, she was a housemaid, she was a young girl, she was something. She was not one of those spiritual people that they needed there to get Peter out of prison. However, I want to point out something before we get done. She was better than any of the other people there. She was actually probably the best person who was in that house. Now, there were many gathered together praying, and they were probably patting each other on the back and saying, "We have to have faith in God. Peter has to get out of prison." And they were probably praying like I've heard a lot of Christians pray, like, "God, you can't do this to us. We have to have Peter. We're going to die without Peter. You have to get Peter out of prison." And they were probably all emotional and everything. And a knock comes at the door. And one little girl in the room has sense enough in her head that somebody needs to answer the door. Nobody went with her to make sure that she was safe, to make sure that it wasn't the authorities of Jerusalem coming to get them. She goes to the door to answer it by herself. Now, she's not the most intelligent person in the world. She is a girl. She works on emotion, not sense. Okay, she gets to the door. And she hears Peter outside calling. And she doesn't have the sense. She gets too excited to reach out and open the door for him. So she goes flying back into the house to tell all the people that Peter is there. It says, when she knew Peter's voice, she opened not the gate for gladness, but ran in and told how Peter stood before the gate. Now, what did all of the people do who were in there praying? And prayer, it said in the earlier part of the chapter, had been made without ceasing for Peter by the church of God. Since Peter had been put in prison, they had not quit praying for him. The church had been praying with all their power. And what did they say when she told them Peter was at the gate? "You are insane." In modern English, They said unto her, Thou art mad. Rhoda, what are you doing going to the gate and thinking without even opening it that it's Peter out there? Give us a break. Peter is in prison. What do you think we're here praying about? Now, to me, it would appear quite evident that there was not a single person in this group who was expecting Peter to be let out. What were they praying for? When Peter got out and was at the gate, they didn't believe it. Okay. She didn't give up. She constantly affirmed that it was even so. And when she's standing there arguing with them, saying, Peter is at the gate, they said, it is his angel. What is that supposed to mean? It's easier for Peter's angel to be at the gate than it is for Peter. Why? When the whole church is praying for Peter to be let out of prison, why is it so difficult for Peter to be at the gate? I don't know if that's what they actually thought or not. But, meanwhile, Peter continued knocking. Now, Peter could have gotten down on his hands and knees and started praying, Lord, please send the angel back. I need another door opened. But Peter had something at this point that he could do. He could knock. And he had one good thing going for him. Somebody had already come to the door and heard him and had gone flying back into the house. So he had hope somebody was going to be coming to let him in. It says, and when they had opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. Finally, Rhoda convinced the people that Peter was at the door, or at least somebody was. And so they decided to quit the praying for a little bit and go to the gate and find out who was there. And when they had opened the gate, there stood Peter. And they could not believe it. Now, has anybody ever in this room prayed for something and gotten it and been shocked? Let me tell you something. Do you know the Bible says that if you have faith, God will answer your prayer? But here God answered the prayer of a bunch of people who had none. They had no faith at all that Peter was going to be let out of prison. So much so that they didn't believe it when it happened. And God still answered their prayers and let Peter out of prison. Now, tonight, I want to talk about Rhoda. There is, in every human being's ability, you have the decision to make. And most people make this decision when they are fairly young. And that's why I want the little girls in the room tonight to listen. Because most people make this decision for their life when they are fairly young. Are you going to be a person who is a person of action or a passive person? Are you going to let life act on you, or are you going to act on life? There are certain things that every person who is going to do something in life is going to have to face. Number one, they are going to have to be different. Do you know when Rhoda went to the door. She was the only one that went to the door. Everybody else was praying. Now, what is more spiritual, to pray or to open a door for somebody? I would say to open the door. But I think most Christians have it in their mindset it would be more spiritual to pray. It's more spiritual to pray for somebody to get out of prison than it is to let them in the door after your prayer is answered. Somehow we sort of seem to have that mentality. But Rhoda was by herself. She's the only one that opened the door. The rest of the people were praying. She was different. She had to do something that nobody else in the house was doing. Now, there's something more that a person who is ever going to go forward in life is probably going to face. You are going to be called insane. Everywhere you go, when you find somebody who is going to be different than the rest of human beings, go further forward, accomplish more in life, they face opposition everywhere they go. You know who they face opposition from? Let me tell you where it starts. It starts with family. That's always where it starts. You, as a human being, as a child, will usually find people more in favor of you stepping out and doing and going forward in life. You will find people more in favor if it is a school teacher or if it is a friend you have across the country or something like that, then you will find it in your own family. Your mother and father will usually be the first people in your life to tell you not to do what you're looking to do. After they have given you all the advice that they can muster up, your brothers and sisters will usually add to it. To the point of being called insane. Now, fortunately for Peter, there was somebody in the house named Rhoda. Otherwise, he would have probably eventually had to have gone and found a different place to get in and tell the Christians that he was out of jail. Fortunately for Peter, but unfortunately for most of our world, most Christians don't live like Rhoda. Most Christians are hard at work keeping the spiritual machine of the church running. And it is so dead that it won't even believe that God actually answered their prayers when it happens over something that they were praying without ceasing about. What I would like to, let's back up. Give just one more example. You guys remember the story of David. He was just a boy when he came and saw Goliath. He was a youth. He had never fought in a battle. He didn't even know what it was like. He got accused by his brothers when he got there of coming to see the battle. Whereas in reality, his father had sent him to deliver some food to them and to find out if everything was well with them. He was the servant boy. He was the Rhoda in that situation where he came to bring them some food so they could continue fighting the battle. And here comes Goliath to fight. And David wonders why nobody who has God on their side is going to fight with this enemy of the Lord's. And the first thing he gets is accusation from his brothers. What I am amazed over and over and over again at how many people in life float down a river in a canoe from the time they're 13 years old till the time they die. Their life is floating down a river in a canoe. And the opportunities that hand themselves to them, they take. And they know nothing else. Now, what I want to see in a young person, I want to see him stopping his canoe at a boat shop and trading it in on a motorboat. And when you get your motorboat, and that opportunity gets you further in life, and you can go upstream fast instead of just downstream slow, then you get introduced to more opportunities. And those opportunities, when they come, should be taken. And brother, the ocean is big enough for every human being that exists in the world to have their own ocean liner on the ocean. The world is big enough. The ocean is big enough. We do not need, as people, to sit back and let life go past us when there's something that needs to be accomplished. And especially, now tonight I am not encouraging you to live in a skyscraper just because you can. Tonight what we're talking about is a cause. Peter needed to be let in the house. It was time at this point when Peter is knocking at the door that anyone who was sitting in that house praying for Peter, that prayer was going to become sinful moments after Peter knocked on the door. What do you believe? How do you believe prayer can become sinful? Well, when prayer becomes unbelief in a knock on a door, it's sin. When there's a knock at the door and you need to get up from your prayer and go open the door, your prayer becomes sin. God doesn't ever ask us to waste our lives praying for something He gave us. Actually, we're told many times in the Scriptures to work. And you know what? In Solomon's time, he wrote Proverbs about those people who don't like to work. And they always had an excuse why they didn't want to work. And this is what they said. There's a lion in the streets. What if there was? How many of you guys believe that man versus lion, the lions are the winner? Man has conquered the lion from the time there has been a lion. Lions don't have anything but sharp teeth and strong paws and a loud roar. We have guns. We have traps. We are master of the lion. God told us as humans to rule over the earth and to subdue it. There's no animal on earth that controls man. We control the animals on earth. Now, if there was a place where there were truly lions, then there may be something that a person needs to do before they go out and work in a field. They may need to be prepared in case a lion should come. David was prepared when he took care of the sheep. He had himself some very strong hands, and I think he had a rod in his hand. He was prepared for the bear that way too. Let me ask another question about Rhoda here. Did Rhoda ever make any mistakes? What any mistakes did she make, and how do you know she made any? should open the door.
Are you talking about a young girl here? Or what?
Yeah.
I think I look at the big picture. These people were praying. I don't think they were listening for a knock on the door. Whether it was Bobby standing by the door, heard a knock. You heard Peter's voice and got excited. Got so excited she didn't even think about opening the door.
Mm-hmm.
She ran back in and tell the people were praying. So here's a little girl that's reporting a miracle to them, but they didn't believe her.
Mm-hmm.
So they went to the door and they heard Peter knocking. They opened it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think the door was locked. I don't know where it says locked. It was locked. So Peter just knocked rather than just opening the door himself.
I
wanted to surprise him. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the door was locked because I don't think that Peter would have stood out there and knocked for that long of a time. If it was open, he could have walked in. But the scripture doesn't say that. That's my opinion. It's not necessarily the truth. either way, when Rhoda went to the door to open it, she didn't accomplish her purpose. She didn't open the door. Somebody else actually opened the door. You see, the point here is not that Rhoda was a perfect person who always knew what to do. She was a young girl full of girl emotions, and she didn't always have even control over those emotions. She got so happy that she heard Peter's voice, she forgot to open the door. How many of you guys, girls, young people, have got visions in your mind for what you want to do with your life for God, and you are not working on it because you are afraid of messing up? That's my question tonight. I think that our church is full of young people who believe in God, who want to see His work done, who have visions for what their life should be. And fear pins you to a chair. The same way these praying people were pinned to their chairs in the church, in the house, and wouldn't even believe a girl who had been to the door and knew that Peter was out there. How many of you guys believe that it should be the older, spiritual, well-grounded people that should be leading this world for God? Me, I do. You know, as a matter of fact, this is the truth. Rarely in the history of the world do we have any information of a person who became a mighty power for God in life who started trying to serve God in his later years. Story after story after story after story after story of the mighty times that God worked in history started with a person in their teens. That's where they started, with a vision to do something for God. And what did they do? How many of them ever made mistakes? You guys remember John Wesley and the Holy Club at Oxford? John Wesley and Charles Wesley and George Whitefield and a couple other people. There were a few people there, and I don't even know the rest of the people who were in that club. They formed the Holy Club at Oxford when they were going to school, probably in their early 20s they were at that time, trying to serve God with all their might. And for many years in that mindset, they were not even converted. They didn't even know the gospel. But later on in life, John Wesley was a leader in Christianity. When did he start? He started back when he was too ignorant to be doing anything. That's where he was supposed to start, way back at the beginning. What would have happened to Rhoda had she gone to the door and it had been the authorities of the city there trying to imprison more Christians? What would have happened to her? Well, you know, you never know what would have happened to her. She could have gone to prison. Most likely not, because she was a young girl. But what if she had just opened the door and let the authorities in and they had come and taken all her family away, family and friends, and then she would have been responsible for that? We can stand, sit, lay, whatever we want to do, and ask questions till the night passes away about Rhoda. But I want to ask another question that's more important. What will happen to this world if young people like Rhoda don't get up and open doors? It's a lot worse things are going to happen that way. And what could have possibly happened if Rhoda had opened the doors and let Jerusalem authorities into the house? You know, the worst thing that could have happened in that scenario is a bunch of people could have gone to heaven earlier. That's not so bad. Life is calling to every person in this room, whether you're an old person or a young person. If you have wasted your life and done nothing with your life and are 97 years old, nobody here. But if you are, life is calling to you, and you can start now. Life was calling the people who were in this room to pray for Peter when they had no faith. And God answered their prayers when they had no faith. What could have happened to Peter if they hadn't prayed because they had no faith? Maybe he would still be in prison. What would have happened to Peter and this church if Rhoda had not gone to the door and opened it, or gone to the door rather, and found out Peter was there? The church could still be there praying. That would be funny. What are the visions that God has for the world? What are the visions that God has? What does God want to see happen in the world? Guys, if there's anybody in this room who knows anything about it, you have the ability right now to get started in that life. You know, I'll tell you the honest truth. I was a very dumb kid. When I was growing up, I was very dumb. I'm not anymore. I'm one of the most intelligent people in Rhinelander now, but when I was growing up, I was very dumb. Just kidding. No, I'm not kidding about being dumb. Jeremiah is miles and miles and miles ahead of me in life. When this dude was a little kid, he starts fixing stuff. Now, I have as much intelligence as you, I have, you know. I could fix stuff too, but I didn't know it. It took me until I was about 18 years old to realize that mechanical things happened mechanically, and that if you took something apart, it would be obvious how and why it worked, and how to put it back together and what was wrong with it. It took me until I was 18 years old to figure that out. When I was 18 years old, this is the truth, when I was 18 years old and I got my first job, was working for Rick, splitting wood with a log splitter. And Rick asked me to start this little 10 horsepower Tecumseh engine. Don't ever buy one of those. Don't ever buy a Tecumseh engine. They are garbage, okay? He told me to start it, and I told him I had no idea how. That's how stupid I was. I did not know how to start a little engine like a lawnmower engine. He had to show me how to start the engine. I started learning things somewhere in my younger years, in my later teenage years. I started learning things because I just decided I had to know something. And do you know what happened to me when I started learning things? Do you know what led me to start learning things? The same, very same thing that I see in Rhoda right here. I lost my fear. You know why I wouldn't do anything when I was a kid? I was scared of everything. Now, this is the honest truth. There are lions and wolves around Wisconsin now. When I was a younger kid, there virtually weren't any. I don't think there were any lions here at all. There were maybe, possibly, a few wolves. The program to introduce wolves into Wisconsin had not started yet, to the best of my knowledge. We lived right outside the city of Rhinelander. There was nothing outside that could have hurt me. And I would not go outside by myself and be away from right anywhere other than right next to the house unless somebody was with me until I was more than 14 years old. I was scared. I remember when I was I don't remember how old I was, but I remember when we got goats. And I got the audacity in my head that when the goats were chained maybe 150 feet from our house, I was safe that far away if I was with the goats. And I was just enough not afraid to go play with the goats to actually do it. I was still scared. And if I did decide to leave them and go back to the house, I had to run fast. I was scared when I was a little kid to go in the basement of the house. I was not scared of spiders. I'm petrified of spiders to this day. But that's not the reason I was scared. I was scared of the animals that were down there. Now, how many of you guys have ever had large man-eating animals in your basement? One time when I was I don't know how old I was, but one time I got brave and I decided I had some paper. I either needed to get some paper or I think I needed to get some paper. We had scrap paper in the basement. I think I needed some. And I decided since it was just away from the very bottom of the steps in the basement, I would go get it by myself. It was a very brave act for me. And I went to the basement and I got it and I came up those steps screaming and crying at the top of my lungs, promising everybody I had seen a puma in the basement. It was not funny. And there came a time in my life when I lost my fear. I decided that it was better to make a few mistakes and do a couple things wrong than to sit around and do nothing. So I started trying things. And I found out when I started trying things that I could do anything I set my hand to. There wasn't anything on earth I couldn't do. Rhoda can let Peter in the house if she's not too scared to go to the door. If a person's too scared to go to the door, Peter stays outside. The rest of the people in the house could have let Peter in the house, but they were praying. Now, personally, what would have been the right thing for this group of Christians to have done when they were praying for Peter? Well, they should have had a couple people delegated at the prison waiting for Peter to get out so they could bring him home. Right? That would have been in faith. Hey, listen, guys, we're praying for God to let Peter out of the prison. Now, when he does it, let's be ready for him. That would have been a good idea. I wish some of you young people, before it is too late, would decide to go forward with your life and be something in life for God. I've said this before, and I believe it today. This church has potential at its fingertips, one of the most powerful potentials that the human race knows on earth. We have at our fingertips right now. You know what that is? Young people. You know, do you ever hear people talking about churches who are dying, and you go in there and all there is a bunch of old people there? Those churches have zero for potential to ever accomplish anything for God. That's not true. Because we all, as Christians, through the power of the Word of God and the Spirit of God, have the potential to do something amazing for Jesus Christ. But we have at our fingertips a power that God created. And we have lots of young people here. In fact, our church is made up of more young people than it is of older people. But you know what? Youth ages. And as the young people of this church get older, that power will begin to fade. We had a girl down here at the youth meetings this year. She was here at the youth meetings for the first time. She enjoyed it thoroughly. And she said, after the last meeting, she said to Ruth, "How long has it been since you've been trying to get me down here?" And they figured it was quite a few years. And she said, "I'm so disappointed that I hadn't come before." Do you know what she saw when she was here? Let me tell you something. She saw two things. One, I think she learned something about God while she was here, and I think she enjoyed that. But two, she enjoyed herself. She found here a whole pile of young Christians that she could be friends with and enjoy herself with. Do you know we have, me and Nikki have, at our business, quite a few young people working for us, going to college and high school. And you know something that I see about those people? They all have visions for life. They all want something. They're all thinking. They're all going somewhere. They're all at the beginning of their life, and they're all planning something. Different things will attract different ones of them in different ways. But one thing is for certain. They're in that youth age where they need that camaraderie of young people to be happy. This church has the ability to take people who have very little interest in God and give them lots of interest in God. Simply because coming to this church with all the young people here is fun. You guys believe that? But you're not going to be young forever. And if you determine in the young years of your life to just float down a stream in a canoe, you'll probably soon grow old. Now, the actual fact of the matter is you can stay young till you're in your 90s if you choose to. You don't have to age. If you actually, just to give you one example of that, John R. Rice, I read about John R. Rice when he was an old man, that when he would go have big revival meetings and many, many hundreds of people would come together. All the big pastors and all the adults loved to fellowship. And you know what John R. Rice did when they weren't having meetings? He went and played with kids. But you see, you remember something. John R. Rice started holding revival meetings when he was like 19 years old or something. You see, he began to live when he was a kid. And when you begin to live when you're a child, that life can be prolonged. When you let your childhood slip away from you and you never learn to live it, you age fast and you become an adult. And what I call adult, and don't get offended, any of you guys who are adults here, because if you don't have this attitude, you're not an adult. But what I call an adult is somebody who stinks. That's what I call an adult. Somebody who doesn't like kids. They grumble at everybody. They're upset with everybody. They complain every time they're in a store about something the cashier did. Never happy. Their scowls are 23 hours and 57 minutes of the day. And the only reason they don't scowl the other 3 minutes of the day is because they were in a deep enough sleep for those 3 minutes not to scowl. That's an adult. And most people find themselves becoming one of those eventually in life. Most people get there. Where does a young person start? In being the kind of a person who is going to go forward in life. Where does a young person start? The answer is always the same. It's the same for every person that is alive. You start at the beginning. Okay? Where's the beginning? It's where you are. Where are you? You know that. I don't know where you are. You know where you are. You know what's in front of you. You know the thing that you have thought 16 times about. I should do this for God. You know what it is. You know what God has put on your heart, or somebody you could talk to, or something you could do, or even just as simple as learning to play a musical instrument to glorify God with. Something that simple. You know what it is that's on your heart. Don't play a musical instrument, guys. If you learn to play a musical instrument, you might break it, and they're very expensive. You know what I mean? We, as Christians, will go forward when we quit fearing and we start trusting. We, as Christians, will accomplish more for God when we can get rid of the fear in life and get and get into trust mode with God. And this is my vision right now. This is my vision. I would like to see all the young people, all the way up from as little as can understand this tonight, all the way up to into their 90s, I would like to see all the young people here who are here tonight begin working in a vehement, wild fashion, putting some effort into life for God, so that as a church, we're like a firecracker. You know, the Bible says a city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Firecrackers that aren't on a hill can't be hid. We can be that. We can be that through God and through His Word. We can be that if we will be that. And those of you who can't do anything because you're too stupid and can't do anything but make mistakes. That's where you start then. If the only thing you can do is make mistakes, start making mistakes. There was a time in my life when there were people that I would see on a weekly basis. And if that person were to turn to me and say hi, not one sound came out of my mouth. I was too shy. Now, as time went by, I started learning to be able to say hi to people. And then as time continued to go by, I started learning to make conversation once in a while with the right person. And then there came a time in my life when, you'll never believe it, I had to start preaching to people in a church. Anybody know how well I did? Well, I got Nikki's critique. She's the only one that was bold enough to tell me. You look and sound like you're mad all the time. And she said, I know you're not. I know you're just really scared. But you look all the time like you're upset. The other day, this is the honest truth, I have never, ever listened to one of my sermons, ever. I cannot do it. But the other day, I was on Roy's website, I think it was Roy's, I can't remember now, and I downloaded one of my sermons for curiosity and started listening to it, and I almost died. I listened to about 5 minutes and shut it off, and it was so pathetically horrible. And I continue coming to church and preaching with that kind of a job. And you know what the cool thing about it is? In spite of the fact that I talk like an idiot, I can't say anything, I sound stupid, everything I say comes out poorly, in spite of that fact, there have been a few times in my life where people who have listened to me have learned something, and they have gone further forward in their life than if they hadn't heard me say it. Do you believe that? That's pretty nice. So maybe it's a good idea that I just stand up here and embarrass myself and talk funny instead of just quitting like I've almost decided to do numerous times because I'm embarrassed about what I do. Now, how many other people in this room should be doing something that you're not right now because you're too embarrassed to do it? Dale, thank you for being honest. You know what? The funny thing about it is everybody always has that attitude. You're always too scared to do something because you're afraid you're going to mess up. And the funny thing about it is when you do actually decide to do something, you just are very normal. You're very standard. You're just like everybody else who's also afraid to do anything lest they mess up. And most people never do look down on you. But you will have it happen. And Rhoda got accused here by the people of her church of being insane. Because she came back into the middle of a prayer meeting. She came running. She came loud. She interrupted whoever was. I'm positive if she forgot to open the door, she was so excited that she interrupted whoever was praying, and she started screaming to the people that Peter was at the door. And they said she was insane. What a thing to call a young girl who knows more about it than they do. They told her she was insane. Well, thankfully, she eventually accomplished what needed to be done, and the church let Peter in. And we need some Rhodas to get Rhoda's voice and to interrupt the dead prayer meetings with something for God. Some of you people need to just go out there and start doing this tomorrow. You need to just start thinking about the things that you think you should do, and you need to start it. Let me just give you one more example. There was a time in my life where I was thinking about going into business, and we had talked, us young people in the church had talked about it. Starting a business as a group. And everybody had decided it was not for them. But Alicia. Me and Alicia were the only two people left in the group. There had been about 20, 15, 12, I don't know how many people it was, talking about it. And after we had about 3 meetings about it, everybody else decided, no, we don't want to do it. But me and Alicia both had interest. So we ended up going on it forward together just by ourselves. And we would get together and we would talk about it. And one time, in the course of the talking about it, we decided, you know, we can talk about this for the rest of our lives. And talking is not going to accomplish anything. Why don't we decide to do it? And so we decided. And we said, yes, we are going to do this, and we went within the next week sometime. We went to Wausau to Office Max. We didn't have an Office Max in Rhinelander. We went to Wausau to Office Max, and we bought a cash register. There we go. We made our decision. But, you know, a cash register was only about $300, and that could be sold or dumped or whatever. We still didn't have to carry forward with our decision. But we began looking for buildings, places to open a store. And we found one, and it was a good place. It was a big building. The rent was cheap at only $500 a month. It was perfect. There was no reason anymore to wait. And we were standing at the door of opportunity, looking into the future as to what should happen. Should we do this business or not? And it was a tough decision. Why? When we had talked about it for 2 years, when we already had a cash register, when the commitment had been made, why was it a tough decision? It was a big step. So we went and told the owner of this building that we were looking at, yes, we'll take it. And we signed a 1-year lease. That was a $6,000 lease. That was more money than I ever spent in my life. Now, I don't have time tonight. I already went over where I wanted to go tonight. I could spend the next 2 hours telling all the problems that we brought on ourselves by doing what we did. There was lots of them. Lots and lots of them. But as it stands today, if I were to put the business up for sale, it's worth more than $1 million by a realtor's judgment. Should I have started the business or not? That's the question. What if the business had folded up after the first year? Well, let me tell you what if. What if the business had folded up after the first year? If it had really been a poor idea and was not going to work, then I should have immediately jumped into something else. If it had been a good idea and I closed it because I gave up on it, then I would have started floating down a river in a canoe. Deadheading. Doing nothing. There are times in life that if you're going to go forward, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to do things you're going to regret, you're going to have to backtrack sometimes, you're going to have to change your mind on some things, some things are going to cost you. But it's the only way forward is to actually start going. There's no other way. And if the way forward has hard things to go over in the path, those things are going to be there until you cross them. They are not going to move if you wait till you're 45 years old to get started. Then you're just going to face them later in life. Nikki tells oftentimes when she's talking to me and when I hear her talking to other people about the time in her life when she was 10, 11, somewhere in there, where she came to the conclusion that one day she wanted to get married. And she said, if I want to get married someday, you know, maybe I should be learning how to do some things. Now, we have lots of young girls working for us at the store right now. And I ask them questions just because I'm crazy. I ask them questions like, where are you going to shop when you have your own house and you get married? And I want them to say Golden Harvest. And what kind of food are you going to eat? And most of them stare blankly at me like, you know, I have no idea because I don't know how to cook. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do when I get married and have my own house. I'm not sure what they're going to do either. They're going to do what most Americans do. They're going to eat garbage that they can buy at the store already made that they can just pop into an oven because they don't know how to do anything because they've been a worthless bum when they were growing up. Now, if some of you people, Charles, you might have the misfortune of marrying a woman who never learned to cook. I suggest to you right now that if you don't know how to cook, you should learn. It doesn't take that much time. A couple times a week, you can come home. Instead of going out hot rodding with a truck or something, you can come home and help your mom make supper. And you might need it, because you might need to teach it to your wife. Actually pretty fun to live when you actually start living. Those of you who are still floating down a stream on a canoe, not knowing how to do anything but let life take you where it goes, are probably fairly bored. And if you would stand up and start doing something, you'd probably find out that cooking is actually fun, cleaning is actually fun, not doing dishes. There's a lot of things in life that are actually fun, that are work. And being an adult, where you're an important person, and you can be spiritual and read your Bible and pray, those are good things, read your Bible and pray. But reading your Bible and praying for the rest of your life will not get the door open for Peter when he needs to come in. Somebody needs to open the door for Peter. Tonight, with that, we will dismiss.